to a game that I knew I'd win. Shame on you for coming right back and doing the same damn thing again. Promises I always make, I can't give, but I sure can take. Now you figured out my game, and it always comes out the same. Sometimes love ain't nothing but a misunderstanding between two fools. You gave me all your love, but what did I do? I broke all the rules. As far as I can see, love's insatiable to me. Fooled you once, shame on me.
If you're ever too sick to record the on a week when we need to record the Patreon episode, we can just release a normal episode through the Patreon.
Do the reverse of what we've been doing for the regular.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the way to go.
This is all your fault, Jeremy. You got me sick with blue balls.
Yeah. Yeah, you've been twisted up for like a week now.
Oh, boy.
Pent up. You should see a doctor, or at least, like, a masseuse.
Yeah, or like a shaman.
I think a shaman would be able to help you.
Probably, yeah.
There's probably a spiritual route to your sickness, that I think a shaman would probably be able to draw it out of you. Maybe, like, a little while in a sweat lodge, and they'll do that thing where they, like, you take a towel, I think, and go, like, to the sides of your balls, and just, like, shake them back and forth real fast. And that will cause the ill spirit to exit. Though it will leave behind quite a bit of ectoplasm.
I'm sure. As the Red Hot Chili Peppers once said, there's a devil in my dick, there's demons in my semen.
Damn.
And I need a shaman to get them out.
Was that the other part of the lyric?
No.
Oh.
It is now.
That's a good song. I don't know which one it is. I know the Bedrock one. Yabba dabba, yabba dabba dabba do now. I know that. I know the Weird Al version of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well.
So you're sick. Your balls are blue.
But I'm still here. Because at the end of the day, when it comes to pornography, I'm insatiable.
Oh, yeah. Me too. I can't get enough of this stuff. I have porn brain. That's what they say on the internet.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you have porn brain. It's all basically the same thing. Coomers, gooners, porn brain, you know.
Yeah.
Other people, though, I believe are more porn brain than us. Now, this is where I believe the general conceit of the idea is your inability to process like normal social conditions or situations without like sexualizing them.
Okay, yeah.
In one way or another. And some people really reveal themselves by the way they imagine situations.
Yeah, I could see that. I think we're kind of at the opposite end of the spectrum where we're processing sexual situations in more serious terms.
Yeah, we're trying to look at this academically and also, like, it's just two guys off the street.
Yes.
We're like, if I was being normal, if I was in this situation, none of the sloppy stuff would be happening. Yeah, we have the opposite of porn brain. I've completely desexualized porn.
Yeah.
I don't even think about it as erotic material anymore. It's just movies to me.
Yeah.
In normal movies, they're like porn.
Oh, yeah.
So I have to sneak around when I watch those. I go to the theater by myself in my big raincoat. Kind of goon a little bit at a time to something R-rated for sure. Can't do it in any of the other ones.
You can go see Oppenheimer gooning out.
Oh, that's 3 hours long. That'd be perfect.
Yeah, that's a good goon session.
Yeah, yeah. Man, really any movie 2 hours and up, I think you're going to get a good goon out of.
Maybe I should get back into the Marvel movies then.
See, no, those aren't R-rated. You cannot. Yeah. It's like.
If they're long, but they're not R-rated.
Yeah, if they're kids in the movie theater, you don't want a goon. Now,
I hadn't thought about it that way.
Yeah, if an adult, well, this is why I'm de-porn braining you.
Yeah,
I'm training you right now. Well, so if an adult brings like a child into an R-rated movie, that's, you know, it's laissez-faire. It's hands off. You know, whatever happens, happens. That's why they have the rating system.
I guess, that's a good point.
Yeah. Shouldn't bring a child to see Oppenheimer. They're not going to like that.
No.
That one's just for the gooners. All right. I think that's enough of that.
Yeah, I think we've gone too far. So, welcome to the Raincoat Report once again. This is Boss here with Blue Balls with Jeremy.
My balls... are blue because I've been missing you.
Aw.
So blue. Blue like my number two.
That's concerning as well.
I've been eating nothing. I've been subsisting just on the blueberry Batman Returns slushies from McDonald's.
Those are kind of hard to find these days.
I froze a lot of them back in the day.
Fair enough.
They've kept.
Well, they were designed to be frozen. It makes sense.
Yeah. They were designed to be kept in the subarctic with Danny DeVito and all his little penguins.
That's right. In the frozen sewer.
Some parts of it. In winter.
Yeah.
I don't know. I bet the water down there is always... little warm because of all the pee in it.
Yeah, I mean, pee can get cold.
Pee can get cold, but if there's a constant stream of piss being introduced to it, it'll just keep it right at room temperature.
Fair enough.
It keeps it flowing. It won't freeze.
Unless Mr. Freeze comes to town.
Fuck.
But that's more of a Batman and Robin problem and less of a Batman Returns problem.
Yeah, we're quite feverish if you can't tell.
So, we're here, we're ill, and we're recording the podcast, so you're welcome, Internet. And once again, it's because we're insatiable, and this week we're talking about Insatiable.
Yeah, starring none other than the Ivory Snow Girl herself, and star of David Cronenberg's Rabid.
Yes.
Miss Marilyn Chambers.
Yes. And, of course, we get to see the Ivory Snow box in this film as well.
Yeah, cute. I thought they were being cute.
Yes. But, this is an interesting film. The story of an heiress / fashion model / actress and the way that she tries to live her life while satisfying her insatiable sexual urges.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot more like the Barbie movie than Oppenheimer.
Fair enough.
I liked it. That was a good movie. Did you see it?
I haven't seen it, no.
I enjoyed it.
I figured it's probably worth watching as somebody who watches funny movies.
It's worth it as just, I think just getting nice and stoned and just appreciating all the colors and everything. You know, just on like a very primal childlike level is a good way to experience it.
Fair enough.
But also having the adult mind to process some of the jokes.
All right, fair enough. This is less colorful, but it is full of some colorful characters.
It is. It's a different sort of colorful.
Yeah, so of course we have our Marilyn Chambers, as we discussed. But we also have her joined by Serena, John Leslie... Jesse St. James.
John Leslie returning again from last week, looking for more work.
With some smaller roles for Richard Pacheco, Mike Ranger, David Morris, and John C. Holmes, credited as the quote-unquote ultimate fantasy lover.
Yeah. Ultimate Fantasy Lover sounds like a Bootsy Collins song.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He would really get the bass going. I can't think of John Holmes the same way after since I've seen Wonderland.
Oh.
Let's think about what if he, instead of John Holmes in every film, it was just bloated Val Kilmer. With a wig.
Sounds fun.
Yeah. Did he have a wig? No, John Holmes didn't have long hair. I think he did wear a wig when he played the other guy, though. Jim Morrison? Yeah. Probably.
I don't know.
I just close my eyes and I see, for some reason, is fat Val Kilmer in like a Legolas wig. Just going to town on Marilyn Chambers.
this is directed by Stu Siegel. Who, I don't know what else he directed.
Some good research, boss. The Younger the Better?
Oh, he directed Drive-In Massacre, which I haven't seen, but I'm familiar with. He also directed Insatiable 2. 4 years later.
Oh, yeah. Saddle Tramp Women. Yeah, it looks like he started out as a... We should really do our research, but it looks like he started out in pornography and then worked his way to TV.
Yeah, he does a lot of producer roles in TV up through the 2000s.
When presumably he died. Nope, he's still alive. Good for him. He's about as old as my grandpa. But yeah, that's Stu Siegel. We don't have much about him.
Clearly not.
Listen, it's been a tough time lately.
Yeah, we've been sick.
Balls have been just swollen to the size of small melons.
Yes. Life's been hard, but we're still hanging in there for...
It takes boss half an hour to get up the stairs now. This is how heavy his balls are.
Just every step, it's just...
Yeah, I heard it. But since we are insatiable, I guess we should try to discuss this film.
I will say that I think that the version that we have might be slightly edited.
Yeah, I noticed in the IMDb credits or the little section, it does say that there were about 11 minutes cut from this. And I have an idea about one of the cutscenes, but that's something we'll get into as we get to it.
All right.
It's something of a thought, but we'll just explore, you know?
Yeah, we'll explore our insatiable
urges for one another.
Oh,
for podcasting with each other.
Yeah. All right. Well,
every other Saturday, whether I want to or not, I'm drawn here like the salmon returning home.
Yes. All right. Well, we'll take a quick break and then we'll be back to talk a little bit more about Insatiable. Suddenly we have more information about the director.
He was married to a woman who had a minor role in a Halloween 3 season of The Witch.
Excellent.
Her name was Wendy Westberg, and she plays the character Teddy. The famous Teddy. I don't know which one that was. I saw that again recently because they played it on Halloween at the Baxter.
Uh-huh.
And it's a great film.
Want to like it more than I do. I think that it's neat. I like the concept of it. There's just something about, like...
It's a great film to show to people who have not seen it.
Fair enough.
No one's quite ready for cyborgs and, like, evil Irish magic. It doesn't make much sense, and it plods along at times. But I think if you're in a theater with nothing to distract you, it's probably a lot better than watching it at home where you can enjoy the sneezes of your loved ones.
I think that there's just a lot of, like, Tom Atkins sulking around earlier in the film.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I like the...
It's a character study.
And, of course, him, like, fooling around with a woman who seems to be, like, a third of his age or whatever.
Yeah, immediately after meeting her. It's right. It's very pornographic.
But, I mean, I love the concept, the horror science fiction aspect of it.
Yeah, it really gets out there.
It's fun. And I like the idea that they had to branch off in the Halloween franchise, even if ultimately it didn't stick.
Yeah. I've never seen the original Halloween 2, but my understanding of it is that it just kind of rehashes more or less the same scares, but in a hospital.
I like Halloween 2. It's different. It's more violent than the original. It's a lot more slashery.
I know they made Michael her sister.
Yeah. Yeah. Or her brother. Is his sister.
They did a bunch of stuff in that hospital. Not all of it legal.
Yeah.
You know? They transferred their sex organs.
I don't remember that part.
It was in there.
I do remember the part where...
The Rob Zombie one.
I didn't see that one.
No. I'm sorry.
There is a woman who gets her face melted in a hot tub, turned crazy hot.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That does sound cool. I like when people turn into soup.
I mean, if you're going to watch a slasher movie, Halloween 2 is not a bad one to watch.
I wouldn't pick Halloween 3 if I wanted to watch a slasher movie.
No, it would be a poor decision.
No.
Halloween 2 is one of the better Halloween movies.
I'll have to finally watch it. I need to relinquish my judgments.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I need to work on myself.
To be fair, I'm a fan of horror sequels in general, just watching them play out. And some of the ones that aren't necessarily great are very entertaining to me still.
Yeah.
But I would say Halloween 2 is legitimately one of the better Halloween movies, if, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely better than it has to be better than Halloween 5.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You know what is also probably better than Halloween 5?
Insatiable.
Yeah. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay.
I will say Halloween 5 is my least favorite of the Halloween movies.
I think it's the last in the series. Like
I haven't seen Rob Zombie's Halloween 2 for whatever reason.
It's out there.
It's over 2 hours long, and when I see that, and I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, he's a little... He lets it breathe, maybe.
I don't know. I should rewatch the first Rob Zombie Halloween and the second one.
Yeah, you do that. I'm going to listen to Load and Reload by Metallica.
Okay.
Let's critically reappraise things.
All right, that's fair. Now, let's do our critical initial appraisal for Insatiable.
At long last.
So Insatiable opens on a shot of Sandra, Marilyn Chambers, playing with herself as we get some flash cutaways to various sex acts that we'll see later in the film.
Even before that, rewind, the credits, this is from a production company called Miracle, and their tagline, if it's a good film, it's a miracle.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's beautiful to me, and I just wanted to shout it out.
Speaks highly to the film production of the era.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's tweaking her nipples and playing with her clitoris. I guess she's imagining sex. After a couple minutes of this, set to our Insatiable theme, so we have a theme song here.
We do. This is also 1980, though, the same year as...
Champagne for Breakfast, our last film.
So this is right in the era where you could get a record cut.
Yeah.
I think I actually have heard this song before, independent of watching this film. I think it was on, I think it was on Spotify. I saw that her name popped up in like green, and I was like, "Oh, she has music."
Okay, and,
it's this or something like it. One of the songs from this movie. I don't know, man.
But
my finger hurts now. I can't bend it, or it hurts like hell.
Man, we're falling apart.
I know. Very quickly, too. I don't know what happened.
But yeah, we get our title card here, and then we cut to Sandra answering the phone, telling the person on the other end that she'll jump in the shower, making a breakfast order with them, and at the end, thanking them. And this is Charles that she's talking to, who we'll soon be introduced to. Sandra puts on a robe, opening a closet to get a towel with the famous ivory soap box on full display.
You cheeky bastards.
So Sandra walks into the next room, greeting Flo, Jesse St. James. Flo asks if Sandra slept late. Sandra tells her she wasn't sleeping, but she was dreaming. Flo asks if it was a wet dream. Unfortunately, they must get on with business and not dwell on this. For today, Renee Reynolds is flying in, and Flo says that she sent someone to pick her up. Flo tells Sandra that today is D-Day. She needs to meet Renee today, and they talk about how they want to cast Renee in Sandra's next movie. Sandra laments that everything she does now is for her career, and there's no time for her to be herself. Flo tells Sandra as soon as she's done with this film with Renee and Roger, Sandra can go on a long overdue and well-earned vacation. So then we cut away to Sandra riding in the back of a car with her Aunt Victoria. So this film has a bunch of cutaways to Sandra in London. And from the conversations that we get in London with Sandra, I believe these are cutaways to the future, perhaps her vacation that she's wanting to get.
I suppose so. I thought they were flashbacks.
See, I thought they were at first, but in these scenes, she talks about the people that she's meeting in the main timeline of the film.
Yeah.
And speaking kind of reflectively about them, I don't know. It doesn't matter at the end of the day.
No.
These are just like weirdly kind of melancholy in tone.
Yeah, they are. They had the budget to shoot in London, so they like took the opportunity, I suppose.
Yeah.
But they didn't take as much advantage of it. They made these, yeah, these kind of melodramatic, sort of weepy, reflective segments instead.
Yeah.
That are not clearly in the future or the past.
Yeah.
Giving this a strange, timeless feel. It's like last year at Marion Bod.
So her Aunt Victoria tells her that she's grown into a lovely young woman and congratulates her on her success. But Sandra talks about how she wants to be flesh and blood, not just a glossy 8x10. Her aunt assures her that she is a real person. Sandra says that it can be lonely at the top. Her aunt says it can be lonely anywhere, but at the top the food's better. So we cut to some shots from inside a helicopter, which lands outside the mansion that Sandra's living in. This is another one of those budget things.
Yeah, it's very nice. So someone had their helicopter license, or they hired a helicopter service, and they do actually take pretty good advantage of this.
Yeah. So we see Renee get out, Renee being played by Serena, and Renee walks towards the house where she's greeted by Flo. Renee says, "This is really exciting," noting that she knew Sandra was an heiress, but she wasn't expecting all of this. We learn from Renee and Flo that Sandra's parents died in a tram crash on a ski trip that Sandra was originally supposed to go on.
Not even, like, 2 months ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, she said it's been, like, 7 weeks since they died.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, she's going through a lot.
Yeah. Flo introduces Renee to Sandra, who's lounging around topless reading a newspaper. Sandra asks Renee and Flo to join her for a swim for a bit before they talk business. But Flo says she needs to run errands, so Renee agrees to join her alone. In voiceover, we hear Sandra's voice as we cut to shots of a car cruising the streets. Sandra says her Aunt Victoria may have been right about her career, but she couldn't tell her about how she needs someone who can keep up with her sexual appetites. Sandra says that she can remember one person who could really keep up with her needs. She was one hot lady. We cut to Sandra and Aunt Victoria talking. Victoria says Renee seemed nice, and she hoped that they stayed friends, adding, in the papers, it seems like stars who work together tend to hate each other. Sandra says that she and Renee were really close. So we cut to Sandra and Renee naked in the pool making out.
They're very close. They're fast friends.
Sandra licks and bites Renee's nipples, and Renee returns the favor. Renee leans back on the side of the pool, and Sandra goes down on her, tonguing her labia and clit. Flo looks down from a balcony, watching as Renee begins to go down on Sandra. Renee turns her attention to fingering Sandra a bit, getting two fingers in there, and then three. Sandra lays back on the side of the pool, and Renee continues to lick Renee's clit and pushes her fingers into her.
And Sandra says, push it in.
Oh, yeah.
And now, here's where I think some footage was cut.
I think you would be correct.
I think a whole hand got up in her.
I would say yes. The Internet Adult Database lists Marilyn Chambers as having done fisting in this film.
Okay. And it's not... So I've sniffed it out.
Yep.
I'm quite a detective.
So
I can tell when a sneaky little projectionist has stolen the fisting footage.
Yep.
And you know what? We want the fisting cut.
Damn it.
We demand it.
Yeah.
Let's get on Twitter and be really annoying about it like the Zack Snyder fans were.
Well, they got what they wanted.
I know it worked. So hashtag release the fist cut.
Yeah, this is also cropped to 4x3, and I think that it was originally definitely like 16x9 or so.
Yeah.
Because the shots seem a bit cramped as well. Yeah, this was one that's had kind of low-quality DVD releases, and that's the version that we saw. But we need somebody like the Vinegar Syndromes of the world to do the Lord's work and release the full versions.
Yeah, we want it. If someone's holding out on us.
Yeah. We cut back to Sandra and Aunt Victoria touring London. Victoria says the Englishmen are going to be falling all over Sandra. We cut back to Sandra driving away from her mansion in a sports car, zooming down the roads and through the countryside.
Yeah, and you can tell here they put good use to that helicopter.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's some very nice shots of her racing away. It does feel like an actual film.
Yeah. We see a man broken down at the side of the road. We learn he's on the way to a softball game, but his car broke down and he needs a ride. This is Artie Goldberg, played by Richard Pacheco. His father owns Goldberg's Produce, which we see as the team's sponsor based on the back of his jersey there.
Mm-hmm.
Sandra offers Artie a ride and they take off. Shortly after they take off, Artie realizes that this is the Sandra Chase, the famous model. Soon after, Sandra pulls into an area secluded by trees and stops the car. She suggests that they can siphon some gas from her car. Then Artie won't have to be late to the softball game. Sandra bends over in front of Artie to get the gas can and a hose and talks seductively about sucking it out, which clearly has an effect on Arnie.
Yeah.
On Artie.
Yes.
Artie sucks on the end of the hose, but doesn't get the gas. I can't get it up. I mean, I can't get it out. Sandra tells him she can get it up and gets down on her knees, pulling down his pants and beginning to suck his cock.
Mm.
He moans and talks about how no one has ever given him a blowjob and how could anybody believe that Sandra Chase sucked him off. Sandra sucks Artie's cock hard, and eventually he pulls out and comes on her cheek, nose, and tongue.
Is there a song playing over this with, like, words about her sucking?
I don't recall.
Oh, because my notes say, Sandra, suck it fast as you can. And those sound like lyrics. I think there was a song.
Okay.
I'm going to go.
Maybe you were just being poetic.
I was a little sick when I watched it.
I don't still. Know. My brain's sick at the moment, yeah, so I don't remember.
You're all fried. I can tell. You look hollow. No, wait. You look backed up.
Yeah.
You're all just full of cum.
Yeah, I'm the opposite of hollow.
Yeah.
I'm too unhollow.
Yeah. You're unhollowed.
Artie says, no one's going to believe this. We cut away to Sandra and Aunt Victoria outside the Hard Rock Cafe, talking about how good lunch was, also mentioning that they had the chowder, which I didn't know the Hard Rock Cafe was known for.
I've mostly, whenever I've been there, just had chicken fingers, but I was also a child.
I've never been to the Hard Rock Cafe, but I assume they were like burgers and chicken fingers and stuff.
Yeah, I think they're trying to disguise that it's the Hard Rock Cafe, but they didn't do it well enough for us. We're detectives.
Yeah. So they talk about London being full of well-turned-out men. Sandra says she prefers to be free versus settling down with a man. Aunt Victoria asks Sandra about having kids, but Sandra says that after her parents were killed, she decided she wanted to live her life to the fullest. We cut back to Sandra driving her sports car, arriving home. She's greeted by Charles, who we finally get to see here as a man with an eye patch. Charles notes Renee went back to her hotel room in town. He hands Sandra a note from Renee, which thanks her for a good afternoon and suggests that they should get together again. We see Charles in the kitchen preparing food. Sandra approaches him for some favor that I couldn't make out, but confirms that dinner will be at 8 o'clock tonight. We then cut to Sandra and Flo. They're talking about Artie, and Flo notes that Sandra is very passionate, just like her mother. Sandra says that her body tingles all over when she makes love. Sandra then begins to tell Flo about the first time she made love, 6 years ago. So we cut to a, I guess, 6 years younger, Sandra, returning home, calling out for her dad.
Yeah, when her parents were still alive.
Yes.
Before that fatal day.
Yes.
This movie has flashbacks. This movie goes forward. It's textured.
Yes. It's temporally unstable.
That's what I love.
Her dad is not there. Instead, it's just Nick, played by David Morris, who's playing pool. She tells him that he's not supposed to be there and tells him to leave before she tells her father. He asks what her father's going to do to him. Spank him? Nick tells Sandra that he's seen her watching him. He tells her she's a cock tease, always walking around the house with her tits showing. He grabs a hold of her and she tells him to get off. He says he's going to get off all over her. She's fighting him at first, but soon she's telling him to bite her nipples. He calls her a rich bitch and notes that she's very wet. She mutters about her father coming home, but Nick starts to go down on Sandra and finger her. She's telling him to stop, saying if her father catches them, he'll kill them. This is not consensual at all, but she eventually gets into it.
Yeah.
Sandra starts telling Nick she plays with herself while watching him, and she dreams of him. He continues to lick her clit in an extreme close-up shot. Nick unzips his jeans and puts his cock in her hand, telling her to play with it. He encourages her to play with it like she wants it. She strokes his cock a bit, and he finally asks her if she wants him to fuck her. She says yes, and he pulls her to the edge of the pool table and begins to fuck her. She accuses him of teasing her at first and begs him to fuck her hard, and indeed, he does. Nick then makes Sandra suck his cock, telling her to suck it good or he won't fuck her again.
Yeah, and he slaps her with it a lot.
Yeah.
All the pool balls are red. Do you know what that's about?
I don't.
Do we have any snooker fans out there that can
enlighten us? Is it a different billiard game that uses red balls?
Perhaps.
It's the opposite of blue balls, red balls?
Yeah, red balls are...
Red balls is when your dominatrix is had enough of your shit.
Yeah, she's twisted them all up.
Yeah.
Good luck getting them out.
Good luck untangling them.
Yeah, before they turn blue.
Suck it like you want me to fuck you.
No.
He gives her instructions on how to suck it and slaps her face with it. She sucks and strokes Nick's cock more, and he tells her he's going to come. Sandra tells him to come on her face, and he lays her head back off the pool table and fucks her mouth a bit before he pulls out and comes all over her face.
It's a bit of a rough edge to get face fucked on.
Yeah, you would think, like, the edge of a bed is...
something soft.
Yeah.
Something pillowed.
Yeah. We cut back to Flo saying that she couldn't imagine Sandra doing something like that. Sandra says that she just likes being held down and made love to. Flo says Sandra was so young, but Sandra says that while she was young, sexually, she was ready. Flo says she never imagined Sandra was that type of woman. We cut back to Sandra and her aunt touring London. Aunt Victoria asks Sandra about the leading man in her film. What was his name? And Sandra says Roger. Roger Adams. So we cut back to Sandra's house where Charles is answering the door and welcoming in Roger, played by John Leslie.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Love to see it.
Charles asks Roger to wait in the main room and gets a drink order for him. We cut to Sandra and Flo getting ready, putting on makeup. Sandra asks Flo about how excited she seems, and Flo mentions Roger is a special lover to her. Sandra goes downstairs to meet Roger. He asks how she's been and asks where Flo is, who soon joins them. Roger lights up when he sees Flo and walks over to hug and kiss her, noting that it's been a long time. We see Flo, Roger, and Sandra having dinner. Roger says Flo is a genius and he's excited to be in a movie with Sandra and Renee. Sandra excuses herself, saying she's had a long day, and suggests that Flo and Roger probably have a lot to catch up on. Sandra tells them good night and leaves as Flo and Roger toast with their wine glasses. We cut back to Sandra in London, this time walking around alone. In narration, she says that she's happy for Flo and that she's marrying Roger. She always knew that they'd get together. She adds that when she's ready, she's sure it'll be special too. But for now, she has no complaints. Life's been good to me.
Just like Joe Walsh. It's been good to her so far. Oh, that's a good song. You know that one?
Yeah.
Excellent. I'm so happy.
We cut to Roger and Flo.
I thought you were going to sing it.
We cut to Roger and Flo, a little tipsy, walking outside and sitting on some lounge chairs by the pool. Roger apologizes for not calling, and Flo says it's fine. She knows he's busy, and she's been busy with Sandra. Roger asks Flo, what if he married her? They joke about which one of them would be able to cook before Roger starts to tell some joke about crossing a giraffe with something else before he's interrupted by Flo, who begins to make out with him. Inside, we see Sandra looking at herself in the mirror, turning off the lights. Outside, Flo and Roger continue to make out. Flo tells him that he makes her so wet, which he confirms with his fingers. He fingers her a bit as we get cutaways to Sandra undressing and getting in bed, deciding only after she lies down to take off her high heels. Roger kisses his way down Flo's lingerie and begins to lick her clit. She tells him to do it real slow. Inside, Sandra's playing with herself. Outside, Flo tells Roger she wants him inside of her, and he delivers, mounting her missionary on the poolside chair, pinning her leg up in the air. They switch to doggy, and Roger continues to pound away as Sandra continues to masturbate inside. After a couple more minutes, Flo tells Roger she wants to taste him. Roger lays back on the chair, and she sucks and strokes his cock for a couple of minutes before making him erupt with cum, at which point she sucks and strokes him more.
Yeah, she goes deep throat on him, and he starts howling like crazy.
Yeah. We see Sandra touching herself and thinking back to flashes of the sexual dalliances we've seen throughout the film. She then starts to imagine herself in a black room, playing with herself similarly to what she's doing in bed. But in this scene, Nick approaches her and begins to go down on her. Then she imagines Mike Ranger approaching her, who's credited here as Fantasy Lover.
Mm-hmm.
He stuffs his cock in her mouth as Nick continues to go down on her for a moment before starting to fuck her himself. Sandra then imagines Flo approaching her as these guys are pumping away. Flo joins in on the eight.
Had we established what the relationship between Flo and Sandra is?
I mean, not clearly. I mean, I think she's like her like assistant or manager or something.
I thought she had called her her aunt at once, but maybe I'm just being sexist and thinking that her name is Aunt Flo.
I don't think that that was a thing.
Okay.
It's possible. It's possible I missed it, as we've established my brain's broken.
Yeah, it doesn't. But, it doesn't matter. But you know, I was just curious if we had established that or not. I was a bit mixed up on it. I didn't know if your notes were any more thorough than mine, and they don't seem to be.
No, I thought she was like a manager or assistant.
That makes more sense. So you can keep it in the family. Your aunt could probably be your manager.
Yeah. Could be.
Could be.
Flo joins in with the oral as Sandra continues to get fucked. Flo sucks Mike Ranger's cock along with Sandra, who sucks his balls a bit. Flo licks and sucks Sandra's nipples and makes out a bit with Mike Ranger as the guys continue to fuck away. Nick pulls out and comes all over Sandra, and soon after, Mike Ranger's cock gets pulled out of Sandra's mouth and Flo finishes him on Sandra's face. The three of them walk off as Sandra whispers, "Please, don't leave me. Give me more." And then goes back to playing. And then goes back to playing with herself. Suddenly, a giant cock marches into frame. It's John C. Holmes, the ultimate fantasy lover.
Yes, not to be confused with Mike Ranger, who's just a fantasy lover.
Yes.
With fantasy lover.
John makes out with Sandra and sucks her nipples. He caresses her face and whispers to her a bit before getting down on his knees and beginning cunnilingus with her. She moans in delight. John then walks up next to her head and puts his cock in her mouth, and she sucks it and he fucks her mouth a bit. John rubs his cock on Sandra's face a bit and fucks her mouth more as we get cutaways of her playing with herself in bed. We see John fucking her some as he stands at the edge of the table that she's laying on. He then pushes his cock into her ass as we see her sweaty face react to quite a stretch.
Yes, I would imagine even just getting the head in there seems like a work of intensity.
Yes.
Probably rivaling child labor.
He fucks her for a moment and then pulls out to come on her pubes. Sandra is sweaty and panting. "More, please, more," she begs to the camera before taking some deep breaths and going out of focus. And then we get our credits.
Yep.
I think that scene, the anal, may have been cut short as well.
I think so. That whole scene with him seems a bit short.
Yeah, yeah.
For what it is. I don't think he fists her, but, you know.
Yeah.
He gets something close. He gets something fist-sized inside of her.
She gets stretched out by John Holmes, that's for sure.
There's no doubt about that. And they leave it all on the screen. I do like that they return to the title card at the end when it goes out of focus. It's a modern sort of thing.
You get
that a lot now. They did it in Evil Dead Rise, but they'd already done the title card at the beginning as well.
Yeah.
I was like, you guys got to stop. It's one or the other. You don't need two. I thought the first one was better in the in that film. That's a good movie, though. I liked it. This movie... It's no Evil Dead Rise.
No, it isn't. But it is insatiable.
Yeah. They're the Deadites, they're insatiable.
They are. You're right.
They want souls.
They do. And
they're not content until they get them.
They want souls, and Marilyn Chamber wants poles. All right. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to give our final thoughts on Insatiable.
I guess it'll be special for me too. But right now, I really
really shouldn't have any complaints. Life's been real good to me.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm satisfied.
I am never satisfied, for I am insatiable.
I am always ready, for I am Fernando.
Yes.
We covered so many fine Fernando films this year, but this isn't one of those.
No, this is not one of those.
I'm just getting, you know, nostalgic.
It's understandable. I mean,
the year draws to a close.
It was the year of Fernando.
Yeah, Fernando.
As we'll get into in our year in review, I'm sure.
I'm sure you'll have many nice things to say about him. We'll do a tribute.
Yes. Wonder if he's still around.
We'll get him to do... what if he's on...
Cameo?
Yeah, what if he's on Cameo? We'll get him to say...
The Raincoat Review.
I think this is the second film we've seen starring Marilyn Chambers, like primarily. I believe Behind the Green Door would be the first.
Yeah.
I would say this one definitely gives her more of a chance to allow for her acting abilities to shine through than that one.
Yeah, for sure.
But this is a very different sort of film than that.
Yeah.
There's no man with a bone through his nose, for better or for worse. No, I was talking to you a little bit before the film, or before the podcast, and I was saying this film kind of has the sort of the tone and feel of a Lifetime film, if all of like the tension were changed from like emotional tension to just sexual tension.
Yeah.
There's this sense of like being like a powerful independent woman. Here are like three different kinds of thing. She's like, I'm an heiress, I'm a model, I'm an actress. I do it all. And I'm insatiable.
Yeah, she's a multi-hyphenate.
Yeah. But I don't know, just like the big house, the sort of melodramatic tone that the scenes with Aunt Victoria in London take.
Yeah.
Just gives it kind of a less hard-edged pornographic tone, because the bulk of the film is just Marilyn enjoying herself and the bodies of others in real life and in her fantasies.
Yeah.
Which is also strikes at another sort of Lifetime theme you'll see sometime, especially at least in the biopics I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
They get kind of feverish with fantasies sometimes. Particularly, I'm thinking of the Anna Nicole Smith film, where there's just like drugged out scenes of her, like just imagining like her like younger self like talking to her and things like that.
Yeah.
This film achieves a little bit of that in it as well. So it's groundbreaking, really. But that said, I do think it is a bit thin.
Yeah.
I mean, not if you just want a ton of sex. There's plenty of that.
Yeah.
Though some of it is missing. And I can't fault the film for that. They tried, and someone stole it. Someone felt fit to just snip the fist right out of there.
It's a nightmare.
Is it, though? Did you really want to see someone take a fist again so soon? Yes and no.
I mean, I don't want to miss it.
Yeah, I'm always ready to see it, but listen, I don't always want to see it. Yes.
I don't want to close my eyes, and I don't want to fall asleep, because I'll miss fists, baby, and I don't want to miss a thing.
I don't want to fist a thing. You know?
If it's in the movie, I want to see it.
Right, yeah. Give it back.
Give it back, damn it.
Okay, quit hoarding it. This isn't Nazi Germany. You can't hoard all the fisting scenes to yourself, mein Führer. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Censorship is what it is. But, Yeah, I think that the stuff in London is just one of those like production budget things.
Yeah.
And to kind of give a little bit more framing to what's a thin story, but they're not that interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't set anything up. See, when I thought they were flashbacks, I thought they were somehow setting things up to her meeting with Nick Morris, or Nick for the first, I think I combined his characters. It's David Morris playing Nick, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I mixed them up. I thought it was going to lead maybe to that, like their first encounter, but that was completely unrelated and separate.
Yeah.
So this film ends up with a very strange, dreamy flow of time and space.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough to pin down necessarily, which I don't think is purposeful, but it does make it an interesting experience in addition to the other things I've listed. I think positively of this film, but it's also kind of a headache in a way. I would probably give it like a strong 3, I think. I probably won't come back to it anytime soon, but I will think about it from time to time. I'll think of all the fists that I missed.
I would agree. This film is, it's on the verge of being interesting, but it's not.
Right. No. Yeah. I watched it directly after our latest Patreon feature.
Oh, okay.
In the sequence that I watched them in, which at this point we can reveal it was Avatar 2, Escape from Pandora.
Yeah.
In our This Ain't Not Axel Braun series. But this movie was like a beautiful, fresh breath of fresh air. But that was after my head had been held down for about 100 minutes.
Yeah, I would say
on reflection, though, it's not as good as I thought. There's some nice production values to it, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I watched this right after Champagne for Breakfast, and because of that, it kind of disappointed me because for Breakfast was a lot more fleshed out.
Yeah.
And it seemed like they were fleshing stuff out early in this film, and then it just kind of ended.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, but you can't say that there was no effort put into characterization. It just isn't tied together at the end of the day and satisfying.
Right.
It's not satisfying.
Yeah.
It leaves me insatiable.
Yeah.
For some resolution and like character, like the end of a character arc.
You'll always have that hunger. Oh, wait, no, there's insatiable too.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe that's what it is that we need to watch the sequel that came 4 years later to get the rest of the story.
I hope so.
But yeah, the sex scenes are decent, but not earth-shattering. You know, Marilyn Chambers is good in her role, but her role is deceptively not meaty. Yeah. Like, it seems early on like it's getting meaty, but nothing happens, so it really isn't.
Yeah, they just pile a bunch of, like, descriptors of who she's supposed to be on and kind of substitute that for, like, real development or characterization.
At the end of the day, I would also give this 3 stars, because, like, it wasn't unentertaining. I enjoyed it, and the sex was decent enough. It was worth a watch. But it was kind of a letdown when it kind of early on teased being more than it really was.
So you're saying you still got blue balls?
Yes.
I hope you can find release so soon.
I hope so, too, because at this point my stomach hurts so bad from it.
Yeah. my stonies are acting up.
Oh, bad case of the stony. So,
awful.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter or X at Raincoat Report, raincoatreport@gmail.com. As we mentioned, the Patreon last Friday, we had a bonus Patreon episode where we talked about This Ain't Avatar XXX2, the Escape from Pandora.
Yes.
Yes. And we talked about something that was, it was a film. and you also get early access to our show and just the satisfaction of knowing that you're supporting us.
Then I'll never quite go hungry.
Yes. Jeremy will be able to eat oatmeal squares at my house forever.
It's beautiful.
And yeah, in the meantime, if you're going to go ride around London with your aunt and have wistful memories of your times with John Holmes and your fantasies, don't forget your raincoat.
I would sure hope they wouldn't.
Pushing soft against your hair. Time for me to leave you. I watch you waving by the stair.